Who is this mysterious group who challenges Jesus on the resurrection but believes in God? We'll tackle the Sadducees next with Jimmy Akin. Hello and welcome again to Catholic Answers Focus. I'm Cy Kellett, your host, and we're in the midst of three conversations with Jimmy Akin on some of the movements in the Jewish world of Jesus's time. Last time we talked about the Pharisees. If you haven't gotten that one, wherever you get your podcasts, you can go back and listen to our conversation about the Pharisees. Next time we'll talk about the Essenes. This time, the Sadducees. There's a certain way in which, as a kid reading the Gospels, or you know, having the Gospels read at Mass or whatnot, you could easily kind of group the scribes and the Pharisees and the Sadducees and go, who are these people? They all seem like they're the same opponents of Jesus. You don't make a clear distinction.
Well, the gospel authors make a clear distinction. That's why they use three different terms for them. So the gospel authors were aware of the distinctions between these groups. It's us who are not.
Yeah,
so,
right.
So I guess we're reading along and it's like, okay, these people seem to be opposing Jesus.
Yeah.
Much of the time, not always, but much of the time. And so we kind of lump them together because we're not really familiar with these movements are.
Yeah.
And that's why we're doing this series.
So the Sadducees then, what makes them distinctive? Who are they?
Well, so like the Pharisees, they're a group that seems to have come into existence fairly recently, which is why we don't read about them under that name in the Old Testament.
Okay.
Now, actually, their movement may go back a ways, but it seems to have evolved over time, to have changed. Scholars debate where the term Sadducee comes from. Now, before we started recording this episode, the staff here in the radio department and video department was asking me about a joke that I'd never heard before, but apparently is wildly popular among priests. This is, I guess, like the priest equivalent of a dad joke.
Priest joke. That should be a thing too. Yeah, it's like a dad joke. Yeah.
The joke goes that the Sadducees didn't believe in the resurrection, so they were sad, you see, which is...
But it does help you remember.
Instantly cringeworthy.
Yeah, it is. But it does help you remember an interesting fact about
them. Well, it is. And that actually will become relevant. We should talk about their views on that. One of the proposals for where their name comes from is it may be based on the name of one of Solomon's high priests who is named Sadok.
Okay.
And so a descendant of Sadok would be a Sadoki.
Mm-hmm.
And you can hear how a Sadduki or Sadokim for the plural could lead to Sadducees.
Yeah.
So it may mean they're descended from the line of Zadok, to give his English name.
Okay.
On the other hand, it may mean something else because Sadik in Hebrew means righteous.
Oh, so.
And so, so it could also mean they viewed themselves as the righteous ones.
Yeah.
However that may be, we know they existed by about the time of the Maccabees. In our episode on the Pharisees, I mentioned how initially the high priest and ruler, Jonathan Maccabee, was initially favored the Pharisees.
Right.
And then one of the Pharisees suggested that he might want to not be high priest anymore because his mom had been a captive in wartime and he could be an illegitimate son of a foreigner and not of true high priestly stock, which didn't go down so well with him. Jonathan had a friend who was a Sadducee who then used that as an opportunity to say, it's not just that one Pharisee who said that who thinks that. They all think that.
Right.
And that led Jonathan to start favoring the Sadducees. Now, you will hear it frequently said that the Sadducees were like the priestly aristocracy at the time of Jesus.
Okay.
The evidence does not fully support that.
Okay.
What the evidence does support is that they were a kind of elite. They had lots of wealthy friends.
Mm-hmm.
So the upper crusties in Jewish society liked the Sadducees.
Okay.
The popular people more liked the Pharisees, but the elite liked the Sadducees. And We do find some Sadducee high priests, but not all priests and not all high priests were Sadducees. There were also Pharisees. So these two groups kind of, you would find at the time of Jesus, the Jewish nation in terms of its, I mean, it was ruled by the Romans, but the local government was a council known as the Sanhedrin.
Right.
And they met at a place on the Temple Mount called the Hall of Hewn Stones, because they had these polished stones. And both Pharisees and Sadducees were on that council. So they both, as groups, had enough social clout that they both got places in the ruling council. And like I said, we do find some high priests that are Sadducees. One of them is a guy who served around, very briefly, around AD 62. His name was, the Latin version is Ananus, or the English Latin version is Ananus, son of Ananus. But his Aramaic name would be more like Hananiah bar Hananiah.
Okay.
And he's the high priest that had James, the brother of Jesus, the so-called brother, put to death.
Yeah.
He was the one that did that. And we know he was a Sadducee. And Josephus brings that up in connection with what he talks about Jesus's so-called brother, James, and how he died. He mentions that Ananus was a Sadducee. And he kind of makes a point about that, because one of the things he uses it as an illustration, because one of the things that Josephus says is the Sadducees, when it came to applying the law, were the strictest of the groups, meaning they were the most merciless.
Yeah.
So if they put you on trial, they were going to show you less mercy than anybody else.
Right. Okay.
And even though James the Just was very popular with the people and had a reputation for being pious, that's why he was called James the Just. He was a Sadduce himself.
He was
not righteous. A Sadducee, but he was righteous. He had his reputation for righteousness. In fact, according to some early accounts, his knees were like camel knees because he spent so much time down on them praying.
Yeah.
And so he had a reputation for great righteousness, but merciless Sadducee high priest going to put him to death when he has the opportunity.
Okay.
Now, there are other interesting things about the Sadducees. We mentioned that they didn't believe in the resurrection of the dead. And they also didn't believe in angels or human souls. They thought that when you died, that's it.
Wow.
Yeah. So no afterlife. That's very unusual in terms of religions. Most religions, all religions have some kind of opinion about the divine and the afterlife.
Yeah.
And the Sadducees did believe in God.
Yeah.
But they did not believe in an afterlife. So they thought any benefit you're going to get from worshiping God is going to be in this life. So they had a very worldly perspective in that way. So they thought you should worship God and things will go better for you as a result of worshiping God, but just in this life.
Yeah.
They also did not believe, they had some other interesting related views. One of them is they wanted to, so there was a debate at the time about predestination and free will. Fortunately, today that's completely settled, right?
I mean, we never talk about that. Yeah. You never see a Calvinist and a Catholic get it in any conversations about that.
Well, this was a live debate back in their time. Yeah. And some people, and this is not just in Jewish society, I mean, Greeks debated the same thing.
Yeah.
But some people would say everything is fated. And they understood that to mean there's something in the universe like God or in the fates, who chooses everything that's going to happen, and nobody really has free will. The other position says, no, we've totally got free will, and there's nothing predestining anything. It's just the Wild West in terms of what people choose to do. And the Pharisees, as we mentioned, wanted to hold both of these ideas in tension. So there's a sense in which God does predestine things, or at least certain things, but he also allows a role for free will. Well, the Sadducees didn't go that way. They thought that if God predestines anything, that's going to make him complicit in evil.
Oh.
And therefore, they didn't see this. They themselves did not see a way to harmonize these things. There are ways to harmonize, but they didn't see it.
Right.
So they said, we got to protect God from any accusation of evil. So there's no predestination at all. Everything is free will.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. So they take, okay. So not seeing a way to harmonize free will and the goodness of God, they just say there can't be free will.
Right. Got so it. We know God is good. So there can't be anything but free will.
Okay.
So that was one of their positions. They also would reject the Pharisees' oral traditions. Now, sometimes you will hear it presented as if, well, the Pharisees believed in tradition and the Sadducees didn't. That is clearly false. The Sadducees clearly had their own traditions. What they rejected was the Pharisee traditions the Pharisees claim to come from Moses. But if you look at the actual positions that the Sadducees had on stuff, they clearly were going beyond what's written in Scripture. So they clearly had tradition. To give an example of that, and like in our previous episode, we mentioned that the big debates at the time were not so much theological as in terms of ritual practice.
Yes.
Well, here's an example. You know how in the Old Testament we have these purity laws about, you know, if this happens, it makes you impure for so much time and you need to go take a bath and then you'll be unclean until evening and then you'll be clean again. And this is a kind of ritual cleanliness, not physical cleanliness. Well, the laws get pretty detailed in the Old Testament about, you know, what stuff will make what impure.
Yeah.
But they don't cover every option.
Yeah.
And so there came to be debates about particular things. Here's one of the debates. Suppose you're pouring a liquid from one container into another container. Could be any liquid. It's going to be a clean liquid, but let's say it's water. You're pouring water from one container into another. The container that the water is in, that you're pouring it out of, is a ritually pure container.
Okay.
Okay? But as you're pouring it, you realize the container you're pouring it into has become unclean for some reason.
Okay. All right.
What implications does that have for the upper container?
I see.
Well, according to the Pharisees, it has no implications because the liquid is coming out of a clean container, so the upper container is clean. The fact it's falling into an unclean container doesn't mean anything.
Right.
According to the Sadducees, the uncleanness of the lower container will infect the liquid in the lower container and travel up the stream and impurify the upper container as well, because it's all one moisture connecting the two containers, according to them.
Right.
So, So this is the kind of thing they like to argue about.
Yeah.
They didn't have the internet after all. But you can
see... At the root of that, you can see there's a desire to be really, really faithful.
You can,
But it becomes so exaggerated that the questions themselves, like that has a certain air of ridiculousness to us, that whole
question. To us, it certainly does.
Yeah.
To them, this was like a vividly blazing hot issue.
Right.
And, but it shows us that the Pharisees, because this is not stated anywhere in the Old Testament.
Yeah.
That, so this is clearly extra-biblical tradition that the Sadducees had.
Right.
So one can't really say they didn't have tradition. They did. They just didn't like the Pharisee tradition.
Yeah. It's not really possible to have a religious movement without tradition. You can't have it. You couldn't have everything written down. Okay. So I sometimes have heard that people express it this way, that the Sadducees only accepted the Torah, the first five books of the Hebrew Bible, but that the Pharisees also accepted the Psalms and the prophets and the history books as well. Is there
most of the Christian Old Testament?
Is that true?
Well, there's a little bit of a debate about that among scholars.
Okay,
So there are church fathers who very clearly say that the Sadducees only accepted the first five books of the Old Testament, Genesis okay. through Deuteronomy, or the Torah, or the Pentateuch. There are church fathers who say that, but the thing is, those church fathers were living in an age when the Sadducees had already gone into decline.
Yeah, so they may not
And have... so there's a question of how much actual knowledge did they have.
Yeah.
I think, though, there is evidence that strongly supports the idea that the Sadducees had a smaller canon than the Pharisees did. Now, okay. neither one of them, the Pharisees did not have a settled canon. There was, they had a canon, but it had fuzzy borders.
Yeah.
It actually wouldn't become finalized until several centuries into the Christian age. But I think we do have good evidence supporting the idea that the Sadducees had a smaller canon than the Pharisees. The reason I say that is in three of the Gospels, in the Synoptics, while Jesus is in Jerusalem, in the last days before the crucifixion, all three of these Gospels report the Sadducees coming to Jesus and challenging him with a logic problem. And this is based on their disbelief in the resurrection. And they come to him. Now, one of the things that is found in the Old Testament is this custom that we call levirate marriage. It's actually a Latin term, a levir. In Latin, is a brother-in-law. Mm-hmm. And so the idea is if a brother dies without leaving children, the brother-in-law needs to marry his wife to raise children for his dead brother. Mm-hmm. And this is explicitly endorsed in the Old Testament. And so the Sadducees use this to create a logic problem for Jesus. And they come up to Jesus and they say, guess what? There were these brothers. First one marries a woman. He dies without leaving children. Next brother marries her to raise up children, but he dies before that happens. So the brothers all marry her in succession, and none of them are able to conceive children. And then the woman dies. At this so-called resurrection of the dead that you believe in, Mr. Jesus,
yeah.
whose wife is she going to be? Because she was married to all of them.
So essentially what they're trying to do here, first of all, before we get into the origin of this story, they're trying to reduce his belief in the resurrection to an absurdity.
Yes. They're using a strategy in philosophy that's known as reductio ad absurdum, or reducing an argument to an absurd conclusion.
Okay.
Because everybody knows in Jewish society you can't have polyandry. You can't be married to seven guys at once.
Yeah, right. Oh, no, right. Okay, so, but you were using this to talk about the scripture that they had accepted.
Right. So Jesus, in responding, he says two things. He says, you know neither the power of God nor the scriptures. And in elaborating how the power of God plays into this, he says, we're going to be like angels. So we're going to be immortal beings that don't need to reproduce to keep the species going mm-hmm. because we're immortal. So that's how the power of God is going to affect this. But he also said, you don't know the scriptures. And he then appeals to the book of Exodus, where Moses is talking to God, and God says, I am the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And Jesus reasons he's the God of the living, not the dead. Therefore, there must be an afterlife mm-hmm. and thus a resurrection of the dead for Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Now, that's a very interesting argument. But if you have the whole of the Old Testament to draw on, why would you do that argument?
Oh, yeah, because there's plenty of other places
Daniel. You go to Daniel 12, in the last days, many who are asleep in the dust of the ground will awake, some to everlasting life and others to everlasting contempt. Right there in Daniel 12, explicit endorsement of the resurrection. And there are other passages as well. So why wouldn't Jesus go to an obvious passage? Why would he make this much easier to deny if I'm a Sadducee argument? Why would he make this much easier to deny argument?
Yeah.
Well, for the same reason that when Catholic apologists talk to Protestant apologists, they don't tend to appeal to the deuterocanonical books of the Old Testament because they know the Protestant doesn't accept them.
Yeah, so that's the end of the conversation.
Then. Yeah, so the likely reason is because Jesus knows the Sadducees don't accept Daniel.
Yeah.
And that's why he goes to—
He knows they do accept Exodus.
They do accept Exodus because it's in the Pentateuch.
Right.
So that's evidence that the Sadducees did have a smaller canon than the Pharisees and other Jewish movements, and the church fathers may well be right. They only accepted the Torah. Mm-hmm. So that's quite a possible position. It's a little harder to prove, but it's a very possible position that is consistent with the evidence we see in the New Testament. It also takes the edge a little bit off of another issue, which is Luke mentions that the Sadducees don't believe in angels. Well, there are lots of angels in the Old Testament. So if they don't believe in angels, you know, that would also suggest maybe they don't buy some of these other books that have angels appearing on camera doing stuff.
Right, right.
There are angels in the Pentateuch, though. And so there's a question of, well, what did they make of those? Mm-hmm. And it's unclear what they make of those. In some cases, so the word angel in Hebrew, like in Greek and Latin, just means messenger. Mm-hmm. So the idea was the angels, it doesn't indicate a kind of creature. It indicates a job.
Yeah.
These are the messengers that God has sent. And so in some cases, it can be ambiguous. You might be able to say, oh, yeah, it says God sent a messenger, but that doesn't mean the messenger wasn't a human.
Yeah, right.
You know,
right.
Maybe he sent a human to do that.
Yeah.
Or in other cases, when God himself is delivering a message, maybe God himself is his own messenger.
Right.
And there are passages where you have the angel of the Lord or the messenger of the Lord that somehow seems to talk as if he is the Lord.
Right, right.
And so they may have had ways, at least in the Pentateuch, of getting around some of these things. But in other passages, it would be harder. Like when David takes a census, when he's not supposed to, and as his punishment, David picks, I'll take the 3 days of plague, Alex.
And behind door number one or whatever. Yeah. Yeah,
right. And so you have this angel that's smiting people with a plague, and then God talks to the angel and says, stay your hand, you know, now that David's repented.
This implies two persons.
This implies it's two persons, and since it's smiting people with plagues, it doesn't sound like it's a human in this case.
Yeah, right, right. We don't see a lot of
although it could humans. Be Typhoid Mary.
But she didn't smite. It was an accident.
Yeah, that was an accident.
Smiting is always intentional.
Yeah.
Okay, so some of the Pharisees then became believers. Do we have any evidence that any of the Sadducees became believers, or were they holdouts?
Possibly, but they were coming from a much greater conceptual distance.
Yeah.
And because they didn't believe in the resurrection. And that's kind of a big doctrine in Christianity. I mean, it's like right there with the founder.
Yeah, right.
That's not to say that some of them didn't come to believe in Jesus' resurrection, but probably not as many of them. Also, they were a smaller movement. They were kind of an elite movement. They were not as popular. So they were probably, I don't recall an exact number, but it's probably in the hundreds or low thousands of
how many really there
were.
Okay.
Yeah.
And
also one thing they seem to have had, I mentioned they'd undergone development. In our next episode, when we talk about the Essenes, there's a little bit of evidence that this whole disbelief in the resurrection thing may be new. The disbelief in the resurrection may have been a recent thing among the Sadducees.
Okay. The primary conflict then between the Sadducees and Jesus, is it over resurrection? Is it over the strict observance of the law? Is it just a general, we don't believe this guy?
The way the Gospels present it, the Sadducees are an elite group that is hostile to Jesus, in part because they think he's going to be a political Messiah that's going to start a war.
Yeah.
That they don't want, because the Sadducees of all the groups were the most collaborative with the Romans. The Pharisees also somewhat collaborated with the Romans, but also didn't fully like them.
Yeah.
But they were scared that Jesus was going to cause a war, that they were going to lose. And they also, had theological disagreements with him. And in particular, as we've seen, they tried to trap him with a logic bomb concerning the resurrection, which he then adroitly snipped the wires on.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
He knew. He
defused it.
Snipped. You would have too, Jimmy. I know that you are very good at defusing bombs. I'm just referring to that video we made that one time.
Okay.
Do you remember the one where?
Oh yeah, yeah.
what's that called? Life at Catholic
Life at
Answers.
Catholic Answers. Yeah.
All right. So the unlike the Pharisees, then the Sadducees don't seem to in the decades following Jesus to play an important role, or really in the sense of the Pharisees, the central role in establishing post. Temple Judaism.
Right. What we do see, I mean, some people have said, and these are some people will say it's because they were the priestly aristocracy. So when the temple dies, they lose all their position.
I see.
That's not really true.
Okay.
They weren't strictly identified with the temple aristocracy. And just because you're a priest of a priestly family doesn't mean you lose your authority. There are people today who in Judaism who were named Cohen. Which is the word for priest. They're still, it's like, okay, this guy gets to do special things in the synagogue that other people don't get to do.
And might get some money when somebody has a baby.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's one of the...
Right, it was a redemption price for the firstborn sons. But they did, nevertheless, they were a smaller group, and they did lose authority afterwards, and they kind of merged with some other groups, it seems. Mm-hmm. Ideologically, but eventually became diluted afterwards.
All right. So the next group we're going to discuss then is the Essenes.
One other thing, though. Their memory did live on. I mentioned in our discussion of how rabbinic Judaism grew out of Pharisaism.
Yeah.
So you have the Mishnah and the Talmud that are commentaries that attempt to preserve traditions from this period.
Right.
Well, they, in all their debates, you know, on different positions, they tell us the positions of the Sadducees.
Oh, okay.
So like the rabbis are saying, well, the Sadducees said this, but we say this.
Oh, so they're a nice foil.
Yeah.
They kind of go on forward as a foil. All right. The Essenes, they're the hippies of... No, I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding. We'll find out about...
Ultra-strict, crazy religious commune hippies, yeah.
Yeah, that's what I was going to get at. All right, so we'll tackle the Essenes next time. Thanks so much for joining us on Catholic Answers Focus. First of all, thank you, Jimmy.
My pleasure.
I appreciate it every time you do this with us. And when you get your podcast, probably from Apple, would you give us those 5 stars? It really, really does help to grow us and share. What we're doing here, maybe refer people to where you get your podcasts or refer them to CatholicAnswersFocus.com. We'll see you next time, God willing, right here on Catholic Answers Focus.